The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Racing at Indianapolis. So much history here at the Brickyard.
Alexander Rossi ends a three-year drought and is an IndyCar race winner again.
Great job, boys. Great job.
AJ Allmendinger in the Xfinity Series. What a run he has had. He'll cross the yard of bricks. Allmendinger wins at Indy again.
Great work.
Now it's time to cap off the triple header with the NASCAR Cup Series here at the world's greatest race course.
Oh man.
Big hit here for Ty Dillon.
42.
You okay?
Yeah, I think so.
Now, the race to turn one. A lot of contact. The round goes two cars, three cars now around.
The NASCAR.
Eric Jones in the 43 goes around.
Truex.
Austin Dillon in the three. Flag back in the air. Ryan Blaney sideways in front of the field. And around goes the one. He's able to get by the
eight. Unbelievable. Is he legal? Is he supposed to be there or not?
Reddick fights back. He's going to try to take the outside line. Reddick grabs the lead as he comes back out on the front stretch. One more time around. What a race he has put together. Tyler Reddick looking for his second Cup Series win. It's going to come in Indianapolis.
This is one really special place to race, and really excited to kiss the bricks here in a little bit, and really excited that we got 3C their win in their hometown.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to NASCAR America Motor Mouths, along with the mayor, Jeff Burton, Dustin Long, Marty Snyder here hanging out with you this afternoon. Coming up on the show today, the guy you just saw on television right there, Tyler Reddick, winner in Indianapolis. He will join us here shortly off of a career-best finish. Harrison Burton will join us as well. Proud Papa gets to interview his son. And our buddy Dale Jarrett will be here as well. And, of course, we want to hear from you guys. Also, 844-NASCAR-NBC. I think there's just a couple of things to talk about, guys. With all those highlights, I would say there's a lot of things to talk about. But I want to start with Tyler Reddick. What an impressive performance, Jeff. And yes, it you know, they were dominant throughout the race. But how does a driver stay that unflappable through that many restarts and pull off a win?
Well, being on the front row, number one, that helps a great deal. Great launches and get away. We've seen at places, road courses, Sonoma especially, mm-hmm. you know, when you get something that narrows down into a very tight corner, you're going to have problems. It's so important to start on the front row. You can start on the front row, you try to keep the chaos behind you. Second row on back. I mean, you can get wrecked from anywhere, but certainly being able to control it from the front row is an advantage.
Well, and there was also, remember, there was a restart with a couple restarts before the end of the race where he was restarted eighth. And he made a really nice move to get to the middle and get to the inside and get in position into turn one and gain several spots. And that was kind of when he needed to catch up with, Bell and maybe Blaney and really kind of mark them. And he did a really good job of that and just was really solid. And again, he had the best car and he knew how to handle it. It was one thing I asked him in the press conference afterwards, how do you handle something like that? And one of the things I thought was really interesting from his perspective is like, look, you know what you've got, you don't push it and extend yourself. Like on pit road, you don't go 105%, you go 90, 95%. You take care of the car, you don't make the mistakes. And that's what he did and was in the right position and able to take advantage of it.
Who are you interviewing?
Yeah, I don't know that he does 90% anything, does he? Yeah. He was interviewing Tom.
Are you sure you had the right
That's
guy?
What he said. That's what he said. We can ask him.
Hey, Dustin, the announcement of Tyler moving to 2311, obviously a couple of weeks ago in 2024, there were and are still some hurt feelings at RCR headquarters. Yeah. So does this maybe, you know, help them put all of that behind them and maybe melt the ice a little bit of what's going on at RCR?
I think melt the ice is a really great way to describe that, Marty, because I think still there are still the hurt feelings and trying to work through those things. And again, Richard's a proud individual, and I think it's going to take time for him. And it may take time for some of the individuals within the organization and the team with how this announcement came about. So I think it's going to take time, but as Tyler said after the race, winning helps on things like that.
Hey, look, they have to be in this together. I mean, you know what I mean? I know Richard has his feelings hurt, and I know it's a difficult conversation for Tyler. I know Tyler's doing what he wants to do, But that doesn't mean it's not an awkward conversation and a difficult conversation for him as well. But they both need each other, and they've got a lot of time to spend with each other, and they got to find a way to make it work. And I said it on the broadcast during the race yesterday, is that it's in Richard Childress' best interest for that 8 car to run up front and to win races and contend for championships, because that's the best way you recruit. You recruit sponsors, you recruit crew members, you recruit the next driver. If that car is out front versus running 20, if you're running 20, you're recruiting a different group of people. You need that car up front. Richard Childress needs to take advantage of the skills that Tyler Reddick has, and Tyler needs to take advantage of the skills that RCR has and just move forward. It's going to be difficult to do. And when it gets hard, Marty, is in those low moments. You blow a tire, you break an engine, the driver messes up. That's when it's really going to get difficult. If you can't get along on a win, it's going to be really difficult when it gets tough. And that's when they're really going to have to look at each other and look at themselves in the mirror and say, hey, this is not only good for the people around me, it's also good for me.
Well, the fact they had not talked since Tyler walked out of his office from telling him about the 2311 situation until victory lane tells you a lot, doesn't it? But, you know, winning kind of cures everything in the racing world, Jeff.
Yeah, it does. And I, you know, the fact that they were on victory lane, the fact they were kissing the bricks.
I mean, look, if they would have been like three people apart and not stay, you know, be shoulder to shoulder, then you'd be like, okay, this is maybe something that can't be resolved or is going to take a lot longer. But that they're together side by side, they're in this together, they recognize the situation, I think that was very important.
Yeah, and they both appreciate winning at the Brickyard. They both have huge appreciation for that. So together, they accomplished an amazing goal, and they both recognize that.
Richard still took a shot in his interview with Parker Kligerman after the race, saying, hey, when Kevin Harvick and I did this, we did it together, and then he kind of ended everything. Jeff, I will say it helps to have a fast car. I'll add in front row restart, since you mentioned that. It helps to have that. But it was really the key moment of the race when Randall Burnett realized, wait a minute, what they're doing on the 12 car, what Ryan Blaney and Jonathan Hassler have done, that's the winning strategy. I need to jump over to their strategy. Was that a bigger key maybe than people thought?
Well, track position is huge, and giving yourself the opportunity to get track position and keep it, or to not lose it, to change the game midstream, all that matters. And the recognition of, hey, we came into this race with maybe not a winning strategy. We have to convert and change into a winning strategy. Yes, that was huge. And it you know, Marty, we talked about it before the race. You never know what kind of race you're going to get. And I know we focus a lot on the restarts and all the wrecks and all those things that happen. But at the end of the day, the way you win races is you lead laps, you put yourself in front. And if you're in the front late in the race, you have the best chance, obviously, and especially in an event like this. So, yeah, that was a great call, Burnett, and by him. But listen, Tyler Reddick, he's making everyone around him better. He's making everyone better.
The one thing I liked about that is Tyler Reddick could come in and pit on lap 13 just before the end of the first stage. So they were going to try to do, as Marty, you talked about during the broadcast, the two-stop strategy. But when, you know, they decided they had to feel like they make the change with Ryan Blaney coming, you know, staying out till lap 33, they marked him. Well, what that did is Ryan Blaney, when he pitted, he had to fill up fuel for that full 33 laps. So that took longer. Tyler Reddick had to only fill up fuel for 20 laps. That saved him 2.5 seconds. You know, Jeff, look, if I'm a crew chief and I can give you the driver 2.5 seconds on another competitor, you're gonna take that and run to the bank with that. And that was a key thing. And they then later on did the same thing with Christopher Bell. When Bell was one of their key competitors and they pitted on lap 51, is having that, not having to be on pit road as long and taking less fuel and giving them the seconds advantage.
The thing that confused me is why everybody wasn't on that strategy anyway.
Well, like, I think what they thought,
practice on Saturday, yeah, like there was no tire fall off. And so one of the conversations we had on Sunday morning was like, you got to approach this race like it's an F1 race. It's about fuel and the least amount of time on pit road. And that's what it looked like to me. And I know it was hotter on Sunday. But hotter just means slower. It doesn't mean more tire fall off. It just means you're going slower. And so I was very confused why everybody in the whole field didn't just say, okay, here's the evidence from Saturday, and just jump on that strategy from minute one.
Well, and the math would tell you from what everybody had on the calculations that on Saturday you could have short pitted stage one and then run into stage three and still done it on two stops. But then everybody started realizing, oh, no, we're burning way more fuel than we thought because there is really no fall off. They think they built a little bit in, so everybody was kind of three laps short from making it work on the strategy the 8 was originally on. So Tyler Reddick calling in just a moment, but for now, let's grab a couple phone calls at 844-NASCAR-NBC. We'll start with Colton in Texas. Colton, how you doing?
Awesome, guys. How y'all doing today?
We're good. What's on your mind?
Well, I saw the Facebook post about, you know, the incident with Ross Chastain on the last restart, and I had a lot to say to my family about it, but, you know, I guess you guys will do just as good, too.
Yeah, so your thought on that, you thought the penalty came too late, maybe?
Yeah, I think NASCAR just waited way too late to get that penalty assessed. I mean, you know, it came at the end of the race. They were still racing back to the white flag. I mean, you know, and nothing against Ross. I love Ross as a driver, and I love watching him compete every week. It's just, you know, something could have happened to prevent, you know, him and Reddick, you know, not making it back to the checkered flag, you know. And I feel like NASCAR just kind of dropped the ball on, you know, assessing the penalty. I mean, I agree there should have been a penalty for him cutting the course, but at the same time, I kind of feel like NASCAR waited too long to assess it.
I see your point. I do. It put Tyler in a very awkward position. Like, what do I do here? Do I overdrive, wreck myself, racing with a guy that wasn't even in the race? Denny Hamlin last year, you know,
with Chase Briscoe.
That whole thing. Here's my defense. Here's the other side of that. It's a penalty NASCAR can't take back, meaning you can't make the call and then say, oh, wait, we reviewed evidence and we were wrong. So I'd rather them wait a while and make sure they got it right. And so I think the only way to do that is to go back and watch a replay of exactly what happened. How did he get there? Why did he get there?
Yeah.
Did he get there? Was the intent, you know, was he really missing a wreck or was he just using this as an advantage? And that's not a split-second decision. The only way to make that decision is go back and watch a replay.
The other thing I'll say real quick, Jeff, I think I'll speak for you and for I and for everyone on the TV broadcast. I think NASCAR was probably in the same boat. Like, wait a minute, where did Chastain come from? I mean, we were like, what in the world just happened? Where did the one come from?
I didn't know where the hell he came from. I also looked up, I'm like, why is he racing Chastain?
Why is Ross Chastain racing him for the win? So I'm sure NASCAR took them like at least, Dustin, 10, 15 seconds to go, wait, what? What is going on here?
Let me put it this way. I can appreciate what Jeff says about the need to be really vigilant on calling that type of penalty because of the situation, because of the magnitude. I understand that. But I'm also going to say that officials in every other sport have to make split-second decisions. And whether it's the Super Bowl, whether it's the NBA championship, or some other major event, and it's got to be like that. And you know what? That's part of the game of being right or wrong. And I think my concern in this situation is that you had them racing for so long. Tyler didn't know if he's racing Ross. Does he need to let him go? Does he need to race him? He's got Austin Cindric coming up on him. Now if he races Ross, does this allow Cindric to come up and take him? What if there's contact like last year and now Tyler Reddick gets knocked out? And now who wins? Is it Ross Chastain or is it the third place guy like you saw last year with Allmendinger winning? So I think, it's a very fine point, and I understand the challenge that NASCAR is in, but that's the reason they are NASCAR. That's the reason they are the officials. That's why I'm not in the booth. That's why they are in the booth. And so that's my only concern is that the length, and it's like, look, you're an official. You're paid to make the call. Do the job.
Now, I love to argue.
What?
Bring it.
So that's why there's a challenge flag. For mistakes. Coaches can challenge a play. Coaches can challenge a call with a timeout.
Sure.
Timeout, challenge, they watch it while there's no action. NASCAR does not have that ability to do that with two laps to go. So I would rather them, in a perfect world, you're right. They should be able to make that call like that. Unfortunately, I think you should give the driver the benefit of the doubt. Why you have to ask, why is he there, rather than just assuming he was there for the wrong reason? So to do that, you have to go back and watch a replay.
And I think all of this is going to be talked about for a while. You know, was Ross calculated in what he did, you know, which he could have been. So, and the phone lines are jammed. Everybody wants to talk about this situation. But let's bring in our buddy Dale Jarrett, the Hall of Famer, who was with us pre and post race and got to watch it all go down. And we chatted about it afterwards, DJ. Good to see you, buddy. What's your take on this Ross Chastain move? And, you know, he kind of acted like with Dave Burns after the race, like, What penalty? I didn't cut. What are you talking about? You're like, he had no idea what Dave was talking about. He had no idea what he was asking him.
Okay, so I'll first say that when Ross decides to quit driving, I think he can go into acting because that was excellent. He convinced a lot of people and me partly along the way there. But and I'm going to take the side of Jeff Burton and Dustin Long here because I think this is crazy because you're both right. That you make great points there. And with what happened, my concern was that were we going to have the same scenario that we had last year? I didn't know. As I was watching, I had no idea. I saw a car try to avoid getting in the middle of all that. I had no idea it was Ross until the next thing I know, he is passing Tyler Reddick for the lead here. And I'm thinking, where did he come from? And then we quickly got on it. But my concern was, if he was going to be penalized, were we going to have another scenario as we had last year where Denny was the leader and was taken out there? So that was my concern. Tyler Reddick had done such a great job of getting himself in position. Every restart was almost perfect on his part. He got himself separated from all the chaos that was going on behind him. But, you know, I just wondered through all of this and seeing what Ross did there. I could make a point that when he saw that if he continued on the path he was on, he was going to be at least four wide and out in the grass, and then there's nothing to do from there. And so I could make a point that he saw that. He decided to go a different route, but the way that he went through there so quickly, I don't think NASCAR anticipated this, and so I don't know that they thought that someone might even try that, to have just a wide open, go down, make a right-hander, and then a left back onto the track and join in wherever. So it kind of went along with the day, Jeff. I mean, I had not seen the first 15 laps of any race have so much. I mean, Daytona and Talladega races are crazy, but they didn't even come close to holding a candle to this.
It really didn't, DJ. And I think one thing we can all agree on is that runoff area has to get redesigned. Like, that thing has got to be like 10 seconds slower. It has to be a penalty to go
not
there.
Not 10 seconds quicker.
Yeah, so like a self-assessing penalty that it's slower. We saw it during the race multiple times. I watched, pretty sure it was Kyle Larson. He was a lap down. And I just happened to look, and I saw a car shoot out and on our timing and scoring. We can see where all the cars are.
Yeah.
And he came out, and he was no further behind than anybody else. And I'm like, well, that could be used. And so, DJ, one thing I really want to ask you is that, you know, when you and I race, the only thing I can compare turn one to is the last corner in Sonoma. But we had all gotten spread out by the time we got to you know, that last corner. What is the fix, and should it be fixed?
You know, I was in my car a few minutes ago, and I heard Justin Marks talking on Sirius XM, and he said something that made me think that I hadn't even thought about this. But think about a lot of the turn ones that we have, and this being one of them, where it's really wide and the opportunity. Watkins Glen is another that we have the opportunity for these drivers to spread out, make a dive bomb move in there, be three, four wide, and these type of things happen. It's like that entrance to these corners has to be narrowed down to where there's not that opportunity for that many cars to get in that position. That's as long as you're going to have it, these drivers are going to take advantage of that and put themselves in the situation. Hopefully they can bounce off of someone else or someone in front of them gets turned or moved out of the way and they can take advantage of this. I honestly had thought about that last night as I was going back to the hotel. I couldn't come up with any scenario, but hearing Justin Marks talk about that, it made me think that somehow that has to be narrowed down to where that many cars can't get to that same spot that quickly.
Hey, what would you think about, and I, you know, just we were floating some ideas this afternoon, just, you know, thinking about other forms of racing. What if you had like an alternate start line. Like we actually started the race like going into a different corner. You started and yeah. Start finish line always has to be on the yard of bricks, right? I mean, you can't yes, not sure. finish a race on the yard of bricks, but would an alternate start line work?
It certainly would. I mean, you know, if you start the race back over at another point, you know, and I'm just going to say turn 11 or turn 12, that's where the race gets started. You don't have as much of a problem of things, and guys start getting separated out a little bit more if you started back that far to where you don't have the same scenario. So I like that idea. You know, a lot of times we used to use at Watkins Glen, the pace car would get out of the way or we would know that's when we're coming to one to go. So just start the race back there and you would alleviate a good portion of this problem, I believe. So that's another great idea. Something has to be done because we can't continue just to put these drivers in this situation and everybody getting mad at each other over one corner here. And again, in a few weeks, we're going to have the same scenario at Watkins Glen.
With respect to my esteemed colleagues, as the Indiana native, I am a Hoosier. And I can tell you that there is no way in the world that they are going to put the start of the race at Indianapolis Motor Speedway anywhere else other than the Yard of Brick. So I understand what you guys are saying. I don't think that's going to happen for tradition. But let me ask you this, Dale, and even for you, Jeff. I think there's become a lot of conversation about how over-aggressive drivers are. And obviously, understanding this wide straightaway into this narrow corner. But is it more of a symptom? Is there a bigger problem in the sport of this over-aggressiveness? These cars are like tanks. You know, the contact. We're not cutting tires like the previous car, so you can beat and bang a little bit more and maybe not pay the penalty. So are things getting out of hand with these drivers at this point as we move further into the season?
Great. I'm not going to say they're not out of hand. I'm going to say that I agree that it's very, very aggressive. But the problem lies in more. I'm not going to put this on the drivers. The drivers are going to do what they have to do to try to make their way there. So the car being able to take, the body being able to take a little bit more of these contacts without getting a tire cut, certainly that comes into the driver's mind. They understand that. But I think that the other thing is they understand that these restarts are the time that they can really make things happen. And it's critical that they get themselves as many spots as they possibly can right there. So you can't fault the drivers in this scenario where it was a day that was difficult to make passes. And so they're trying to get everything they possibly can. And that just happened to be in the first couple of corners, especially turn one there. So I don't know that we have a solution that, you know, we can't tell the drivers, okay, don't be aggressive there. You just have to separate them in some possible way. You don't want to put them in a single file restart type deal. We used to do that, Jeff, I believe, that we had single file restart. And so we don't want to go back to that.
We do not want to go back to that.
I started on the inside line a lot. That was a guy I lapped down back
yeah,
then.
Exactly. But, yeah, exactly.
But I think I agree with DJ. The problem is that if you're not aggressive, then you get run over. And really, you get to the point, and this is how I got at Sonoma. I knew I was going to get wrecked. And so I might as well wreck somebody else because the problem is it almost becomes acceptable because Bristol used to be like that. Bristol's the only racetrack in the world where two guys collide. A guy wrecks another guy and he gets out and says, well, that's Bristol. I mean, you know, well, no, it's not. You wrecked me. And Sonoma got like that, and now we've seen it at Indy. And the fix is not, unfortunately, the fix isn't in the driver. You can't have a gentleman's agreement, you know. Hell, we couldn't have a gentleman's agreement coming to the caution. We sure can't have one coming to the green. So the track design, I think, is where it has to go. Track design, but you can't have a rule mm-hmm. about how wide. I mean, you know, you just got to have a track design that's friendly.
DJ, I don't want to let you go without talking about such a special moment this weekend. All the winners at Indianapolis gathering at the start-finish line, the photo that you were able to take. I mean, what a special moment. Now, you don't keep a lot of photos, but I have a feeling this one you're going to keep.
Yeah, for 100%. It was one of the coolest, most humbling moments that I've ever had in my professional career. I took a minute there when everybody finally got there. There were 22 former winners of either the Indianapolis 500 or the Brickyard race in NASCAR. And That was just an amazing group of people. And I'm getting chills right now, but I literally had chills the entire time we were there. And then I asked Mario Andretti if he would kiss the bricks with me. And he said, absolutely. I really didn't know if he would, but he said, you know, I didn't get to do that. And he said, it was a great tradition that got started because of your win in 96. So, you know, just a very humbling moment to have all of that. That group there represented 44 wins at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So just incredible. It was great to see, you know, people like Ricky Rudd. We don't see him around the racetrack that much. And he came up for that photo. Jeff Gordon there. Just an incredible time. And to see the guys that have won the Indianapolis 500. And then to have Mr. Penske there, who, Marty, you know probably. I don't know the number. I know it's high up in the teens of number of times he's won. Yeah, so yes, just an amazing time and opportunity for me.
Got a few BorgWarner trophies, no doubt about it. So we need to retake that picture next year because we have to add Tyler Reddick to it now, DJ. So
yeah,
make sure we'll schedule that. So, all right, buddy, good catching up with you. We'll see you soon, okay? Speaking of Tyler Reddick, he's here. He'll join us when we come back from break here on NASCAR America Motor Mouse. What's up, Reddick?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Richard Childress Racing, win number 2, back-to-back road course wins, and what a way to celebrate, too. Indianapolis on the Yard of Bricks. I know there was a fence climb involved. I didn't see that part. I must have left. Bo coming up, giving the hug to Daddy. And then, Tyler, I believe you said, we did it. Turning to the fans there, we welcome in Tyler Reddick to NASCAR America Motor Mouse. I know the moment with the family was special, but how was the kissing of the bricks? That looked like it was a lot of fun. That's the dirtiest but best kiss you'll ever have.
Yeah, it was really, really great. I never really thought of what kissing the bricks was going to be like before I did it. But I mean, it was a hot day. The track was still really warm, but it was sweet. That taste is always going to be in my memory bank for sure for the rest of my life.
Well, first, special shirt, man. You got it going on with your shirt.
Awesome. Thanks.
But
A+,
very nice, very nice. What is it?
Oh, we got bomb pops all over this shirt. Alexa got it for me. I think one of the characters in one of the Madea movies, she likes watching all the Madea movies, but one of the characters had this shirt on and she liked it a lot. She found it and so she got it for me. So I was wearing it tonight because us and a lot of the 8 team are getting together. I'm actually in Randall's house right now. I'm on the third floor of his house. Just up here hanging out for a little bit, talking with you guys, and we're going to go downstairs and have fun and celebrate a little bit more.
By the way, Jeff asked about it because he has one, and he's going to wear it tomorrow on the show. So, yeah.
I was afraid he took mine.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, man. We should have coordinated on that. My apologies.
Yeah.
Hey, so 2 road course wins this year. What have you done to become such a good road racer?
I wish I had some ridiculous story, but it's been pretty simple for me. Just a lot of hard work. I mean, I don't know, 16 hours of work a week in the off season when we really made that big leap probably does sound a bit ridiculous, but that's how far that myself and my team were willing to go to make it better. Getting to go run some other vehicles and do some other road course racing as well has been key. Working with guys like Josh Wise and Scott Speed, who has an incredible amount of driving talent, and has spent a lot of time racing, you know, Rallycross, Formula One, all these different things. Got a lot of great people around me that help outside of my team as well. So just really simply put the work in. I didn't grow up racing on road courses or on asphalt, so I just didn't know much about it or really even how to approach it. So once the snowball started to go down the hill, it started to just click and click more and more. And I was really fascinated by how much I was able to learn and how much I had to learn with road course racing and just really embrace the whole process. And I'm not going to lie, I almost look more forward to the road courses than any other track we go to now.
Cool.
Tyler, can you take us through, take us into the racer's mind on that last lap? And I think from particularly turn four, or the next last lap, turn four, when Ross Chastain suddenly appeared next to you, all the way through 13, where you finally made the pass. And again, you've talked about you don't know if he's under penalty, if you're racing him. You've got Cendric coming up. You've got to line up for certain corners. Can you give us a sense of what everything that you're seeing, hearing, and kind of going through from turn four to through turn 13?
Well, it was really caught me off guard, but certainly I will say Ross didn't have a shot of making it through turn one. I mean, they were all crashed, so I don't blame him for making that attempt. But it almost more than anything, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I knew at some point someone was going to try it. Of course, it was on the final restart and where it did. But I didn't know if they were going to penalize him or not. I mean, in my opinion, truthfully, I don't know. The way I understand the rule is he didn't have an option of making it through turn one. There was no way. The way I understood it, you take the access road. So in my mind, I don't think he really did anything wrong. He was just taking advantage of the circumstances. It almost really worked out in his favor. I didn't know if I was going to have to battle him or not. And I kind of looked at it as like, I need to get back by you if I am battling you. And if I'm not, I need to get by you. So, I don't let Austin Cindric close in and have an opportunity too.
So I know that was the first time that you and Richard had really chatted since the 23-11 news when you broke that to him before the official announcement to the world. What were his first words to you? And do you think a moment like this will kind of help maybe melt the ice, as we talked about, and maybe help you guys move forward in a together fashion in trying to race this year and next year?
Well, I mean, in my opinion, he's always believed that we're capable of doing what we did at Indy. Certainly, it's really special to do at a place like that. He's now won 5 races at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So for him, he's been able to do this a number of times. And be back again with this group, with this team in the Cup Series, is a big deal for all of us. So more than anything, we're just doing exactly what he expects of us and our group. He knows that we've been clicking really good for, you know, the last year and a half especially. So he wants the best out of all of us. And for us to go out there and get the win like we did is just we're doing our part. We're doing exactly what, you know, he wants out of this team and what his expectations are.
So, Tyler, back to the pass for the lead. I was fascinated by your move, jumping on the outside of turn 12. Extremely heavy braking zone, a lot of right front lock up for a lot of people. And then you look like you lifted early, turned behind him, got alongside of him. Now you had the advantage into the next corner. How did you do that, man? Because I don't think I would have thought that through.
Well, I'm not going to lie. It wasn't really planned. To me, it seemed like Ross was checking up and going to go to the driver's right into 12, like he was going to let me go, like he had been told something. So that, to me, is like, okay, well, something's going on. He's leaving me the preferred lane, I felt like, the braking zone getting into 12. I didn't realize it was a defensive move. Once we got into the brakes and going into turn 12, I realized right away that he wasn't giving it. It was purely a defensive move, which was a smart one on his behalf. And then right before we did cross over, I thought he was just going to completely miss the corner. I was like, uh-oh, like I have to get stopped or we're both going to be going into the motorcycle loop or whatever they call that extra set of corners they have there behind turns 12, between 12 and 13. So it just kind of happened from that point on. You know, I kind of got to his outside. And from that point, I was determined to be past his front tires in turns 13. You know, I was putting myself at risk to get ran off, but he ran me really respectfully. And then from that point on, I had preferred lane through 14 and on the front straightaway.
I have one more kissing bricks question. And I heard Alexa trying to talk Bo through the process. And he was like, we're going to do what? And then, so then everybody goes down to kiss the bricks and Bo stands there like, what are you guys doing? Like he didn't quite understand the whole process, did he? But a cool family moment for you guys.
No, I definitely, in the shots that I saw on the broadcast, it looked like he never took an opportunity to kiss the bricks, but I didn't realize how many times with all the partners and all the different people we were getting in the photos, I thought you were just kissing the bricks once and that was it. I felt like we kissed the bricks about 10 or 12 times. So he eventually, as you can see here, he's thinking about it.
That's an awesome moment.
The further on we get, he kissed the bricks a few times. So that was really cool.
All right. You and your Bomb Pop shirt have a great time at Randall and the party, and you guys enjoy it. We'll see you in Michigan, okay?
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a great time in Michigan. Excited to have Guaranteed Rate back on the car. We've been winning with 3Chi. We've had a lot of speed with Guaranteed Rate. So it's time for me to deliver for our other partners, too.
There you go. Tyler Reddick, winner at Indianapolis, joining us here. When we come back, we'll chat with a young driver coming off his career best finish, a third place for Harrison Merton. Look at that Indy ring for Tyler. Harrison,
join us next. Here it is.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
On Motor Mouse on Wednesday, Corey LaJoy hanging out. How about that, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Look at Monster Jams. That's always fun. Xfinity Series in Michigan. IndyCar at Nashville, that was a party last
year.
Gosh, I'm sure it'll
yes.
be this year, too.
Fun party. Maybe Marcus Ericsson will launch off another car this year and find his way to victory lane. All the NASCAR action on USA all weekend long. Xfinity on Saturday, Cup on Sunday. Time for Speed Dial. So the point here, ask your question as quickly as you can. We'll get to as many calls as we can. And when I said the lines are packed, I'm not kidding. They're all packed. So we'll start with Josh in Virginia. What's on your mind, Josh?
Hey, Marty. Hey, Jeff. Hey, Dustin. Good afternoon, guys. All right. So first off, congratulations, Jeff, on Harrison's fourth place or top five finish yesterday. A question for you guys. It seems like there's a total lack of respect that drivers have for each other, maybe over the last 2 to 3 seasons. I have a theory about that. I'm wondering if you guys think that there's a lack of accountability by other older drivers in some of these lower series, like the Truck Series and Xfinity Series. You don't have guys like Ron Hornaday, Skinner, Cup drivers running in Xfinity. And a lot of these guys are used to racing online. Yesterday, watching guys dive off into turn one, Joey Logano going at like a straight, you know, no
yeah.
chance of making
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Josh, yeah.
Turn one.
So is there a lack of respect,
what,
Jeff?
What happened with that?
So, yeah, Josh, yeah. I think, listen, you have a great point. I think that we do miss some older guys in the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series. You know, when I grew up, I raced against Jack Ingram. If you did that to him, you would get an ass whipping. That's just how it was. And there is some of that that we miss. On the other token, like, what do you know, I don't know what the driver's supposed to do, right? If you're not aggressive, you get run over. If you are aggressive, you run over somebody else. I believe that I think we need to do a little bit of track redesign at Indy. That's my opinion. But yeah, I mean, I think there was a complete lack of respect shown yesterday. I said that on a broadcast. But I think the only way to fix that is try to do a track redesign, because if you don't attack in there, you're going to be in trouble.
All right, Melissa in Florida, what's your question quickly?
Yes, did they ever find out what happened to Kyle Larson's car, what caused him to run over the other car?
Yeah, Melissa, thanks for the question. Good question. I was in touch with the Hendrick Motorsports team this afternoon, and team spokesperson told me it was not a brake issue, and that according to crew chief Cliff Daniels, Kyle Larson just went into the corner, into the braking zone too deep, and got himself in trouble and couldn't get out, and it was just more driver error as opposed to a mechanical issue.
All right, Roger in West Virginia, what's your question?
Did anyone other than Ross Chastain and Austin Dillon get a 30-second penalty? Because there were other cars that took that loop during the race.
Great question. Yes, there were. Nobody got penalized, but yes, there were other cars, Jeff, that did it.
There were other cars that did it. And remember, you're not going to be penalized. The reason they were penalized is because of how they used it, right? The determination was that they didn't have to use it, and they chose to use it. It wasn't being used as oh my God, it's the only way I can avoid a wreck. You could use it. It wasn't against the rule to use it. It's just, and that was determined that they didn't use it correctly.
And in West Virginia, what's your question?
Hi, Jeff. Listen, I disagree with you about him using the access road. Ross Chastain, if he thought he was going to wreck, why didn't he back out of the gas? Maybe NASCAR needs to use that as below the yellow line like they do in other races where you can't advance your position if you use that. What do you think?
What they need to do is make it so if you have to use it, it's slower to go through. He shouldn't have been able to use it and come out with the lead. It should be a penalty to have to use it. He shouldn't have been able to come through there and then end up in front of Tyler Reddick. It should take, you know, 5-7 more seconds to use that access road, and that would have fixed the problem.
I think there might have been some intent there. I think he saw Denny Hamlin do it earlier, and he said, I'm going to try that, and I'm going to force NASCAR to make a call on this.
One team told me after the race, as part of their pre-race planning, they looked at that, and if it was better to go through the escape route as quickly as possible and gain ground, and that was part of their planning into looking at doing that.
There you go. See, you didn't find the Denny Hamlin, and there it is, right there.
Steve Lazard under caution.
Caution. We were in break, and Steve goes, Denny just did this, and I think other teams are going to try it.
Exactly.
And then he said it on the air and kind of first guessed what was going to happen. Craig, are you really calling us from Hawaii? Is that real? And what's your question?
Yes, sir. Aloha.
Love it. All right. Yeah. What's your question?
I'd sure like to know when the racing etiquette has fallen apart. Back in the day, people used to hate each other and never run into each other as much as this.
Oh, and I'm going to disagree with you on that. Man, I'm sorry.
These guys are professionals. Don't they have to have some kind of self-policing?
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. But I want to tell you, Sonoma, the same thing happened in Sonoma for years. I got so mad, so frustrated, hated to go to Sonoma. You can go back and look at me. I said it's an embarrassment. I said the same things these guys are saying 20 years ago. And so, yeah, I don't know how much has changed, to be honest.
Mike in Arkansas, what's your question?
Yeah, back to this turn one runoff. Obviously, everybody knew that was an option and people were going to try it. Don't you think it was NASCAR's responsibility to add like a stop and go? Because that'd take care of everything.
I think that's going to be done next year, or something will be done to slow it down. I don't think that's going to be a problem again. But yeah, it's a little surprising something wasn't done in this case. But sometimes teams come up with things and come up with different ideas a little bit ahead of NASCAR.
I mean, because if you look at it, Ross goes in there, kind of makes a move to turn one, and then he just goes
guns it
flat on the gas. Yeah, and they can look at SMT data and really see what happened.
So, he went in there predetermined he didn't think he was going to come out. Rightfully so. Every bit of evidence said he wasn't going to come out of there. Remember, when he drives in there, he can't see what's happening on the bottom. When he looks to his right, he can only see the car next to him. He doesn't know they're four wide. So, you know, I've been in that situation. You know going in there, you're probably going to get wrecked. Drivers position themselves so if they do get wrecked, they think they're going to be minimum. I mean, that's the mindset into turn one. So, yeah, I think Ross took every opportunity to just see what would happen. And why not? What did he have to lose?
Make NASCAR make the call. Yep. Let's grab one more phone call before we get to Harrison Burton. Zach in Michigan, what's your question, Zach?
Hey, guys. I'm just calling to see what you think about Kyle Busch being a lot more talkative during Indy race weekend, and if you think that means maybe behind the scenes he's getting closer to a deal with Joe Gibbs or some other team.
Well, I'll tell you what, really good question. It's fascinating what you hear in the garage, because I've heard some people say, hey, you know, it's not going to get done, to others saying it's going to get done at the last second, to some saying, well, it's going to get done just sooner than later. I mean, it's everybody's guessing, everybody's trying to figure out. There's a lot of different directions. Obviously, Kyle's talked about talking to other teams. He did talk to us, the media, this past week in Indianapolis, saying he's willing to take less money, even for a two-time Cup champion and being undervalued in the market. There's looking at different options. I talked to David Wilson of Toyota last week in Chicago, and he says they're working in contingency plans, even looking at maybe a potential bridge deal. So maybe that's like a one-year deal to kind of help Joe Gibbs Racing have more time to find sponsorship, and then next year do a whole new deal, and it gives Kyle the money that he so rightfully deserves.
There you go. So a lot to unpack there. As I said to Junior in the pre-race show, TikTok, it's August 1st. They need to get something done if they're going to get it done. Time run out that a two-time champion is still a free agent at this point. When we come back, now we'll talk to Harrison Burton off his career best finish. There he is, third place at Indy next week. We'll talk to Harrison next.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I thought it was cool that three rookies finished in the top five. Career best finish for Harrison Burton in third, Tyler Gilliland in fourth, and Austin Cindric finishing in second. I thought that was a cool moment for these young guys.
And you know what? The last time it had been done where three rookies in the top five in a race was in Pocono, July 1994, with this guy
and his
brother. So the Burtons know how to get these top fives.
We did it three times that year.
Yeah?
No, I'm just trying to
impress.
You got 14 races to get it done, Harrison. I know, exactly. Congratulations on the awesome finish. Harrison Burton joining us here. So what was your view of that final restart?
Yeah, my view was pretty limited. I had a car in front of me and beside me and behind me, and we were all kind of hitting each other. There wasn't a lot of choice there. It was kind of just go where there wasn't people around. And, you know, luckily for me, I got the Dex Imaging Mustang through there in one piece. And, man, it was crazy. I was sideways and got hit from behind and hit my team, you know, my alliance partner up there, Austin Cindric, and it was pretty chaotic. So I was really happy to squeeze through there, as you see there, and get out of there in a good spot. It was weird going into those restarts. The only thing that I was thinking about as a driver is trying to be defensive and put myself in a spot where even if I did get hit, I wouldn't necessarily go off the racetrack or whatnot. So lots of chaos going on for sure. And hopefully the fans enjoyed it at home. It was a wild ride from my seat, that's for sure.
Obviously, things are happening in split second, but, you know, we see you were on the outside when Ryan Blaney spins. What was your view of that? And then right after that, you have the contact. I think you and Todd Gilliland just kind of hit side and kind of slowed you a little bit. But just take us through just that small segment, because obviously a lot going on there.
Yeah, once we kind of got in the corner and I was beside Ryan, really the visibility is to a point where I could really not see him or see what caused him to spin. To be honest, I didn't even know that he had spun until after the race. So when I was side by side with him and he spun, I really didn't know how lucky I was to get through with that. And then with me and Todd hitting each other, I don't think we knew that we were even beside each other. Things are happening so fast. You know, you're more worried about just trying to save the race car, because at that point I was sideways and had a handful of wheel, and it doesn't look as crazy as it is, you know, inside the car. It doesn't look that crazy on TV, honestly. You know, it was wild how out of control it felt. And then when I watched the replay, I was like, oh man, I look like I'm going pretty straight. So, yeah, that was pretty wild for sure.
Yeah, I want to ask you about spinning earlier in the race. At that moment, were you thinking, there's no way we can do this? And I'm sure of all the places you thought, man, my first top five is going to come at a road course. I don't think that was probably top of the list, was it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously made a mistake there and spun out, locked up the rear tires trying to make a pass. It's just kind of a tough corner, and really lucky that these cars are durable enough that could kind of do that and keep going. Hate it. Spun Custer out. You know, that's always awkward, right? Normally when you hit somebody, it's with your front bumper. I actually hit him with my rear bumper, so that's something new. I've never done that before, and you know, obviously hated that happened to him. But once, you know, I kind of got going again, I thought our day was ruined. It was so hard to pass. And then after some good pit calls, we got new tires and started passing through the field and put ourselves in good position for the last few restarts where we made a lot of gains, that's for sure.
You know, obviously, as mentioned earlier, three rookies in the top five with you, Austin, and Todd. But, you know, with you and Todd, you guys have grown up together, raced together, and to get your first top five at the same time with Todd and also with Austin, but to get it with Todd, what does that mean to be able to have that moment, share that moment with Todd yesterday?
Yeah, it was really cool. You know, me and Todd are obviously really, really tight and good buddies, and me and Austin went to high school together. So pretty cool to have those guys as, you know, my fellow rookies this year, and we always kind of look out for each other, which is neat. You know, those are the guys that I sit on the driver intro stage. I talk to those guys because we're all in this young guy deal together, and it's fun that way. So it meant a lot for me to you know, finish well and do it with those guys is really cool. You know, and to get my name with another, I guess, record that my dad and uncle did, like you said earlier, was pretty cool. So I thought I'd have some bragging rights on him, but every time I do something, he's already done it. So that's always a bummer.
Yeah, you'll find that in life. He's already one-upped you. You just don't know it yet. So let's grab a couple phone calls from some guys here, some folks here. Let's go to Chandler in Indiana to chat with Harrison Burton. Go ahead, Chandler.
Thanks, Marty. Harrison, congratulations on your third-place finish, man. Totally incredible job, you know. I've always loved, you know, watching you race with Kyle Busch Motorsports and the racing with Joe Gibbs Racing the Xfinity Series. So, Harrison, you know, with that third-place finish at Indianapolis, and now the next road course we're going to is Watkins Glen, do you think that going to road courses is your next favorite thing? And could you potentially get your first career win on a road course?
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly went into the season knowing I had to get better at road course racing. That's been my number one kind of concern, honestly, is going into the Cup Series and having these next-gen cars that are really new on the road course and trying to work with that and get better and better. And, you know, my dad knows I've spent a lot of time thinking about how to get better, you know, at every racetrack, but road courses in particular, they're beginning to be more and more important every weekend. And so I didn't expect to get my first top five at a road course, but now that we did, it's, you know, got me looking forward to the next one, that's for sure. It's a definite really cool thing to have that happen there and at Indy and all that, you know, but I want to be a guy that can do it anywhere. So try and get the next one this weekend in Michigan, right? That's the first goal, and really take it one week at a time and understand that this, you know, result is a step along the path, that there's going to be many more ups and downs, and keep our heads down and keep digging through that.
Speaking of Michigan, I think Marvin has a question about the race this weekend. Marvin, go ahead. You're on with Harrison Burton.
Well, Handsome Harrison, let me be the first to say congratulations on a third-place finish at Indy, buddy.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
So, Harrison, on to Michigan. We are heading to the Irish Hills. And my question for you is, after that awesome third-place finish, what are you going to do for an encore? Are you going to try and steal that win in the home of the Ford Motor Company this weekend?
That'd be a great place to do it, right in Ford's backyard, that's for sure. You know, the Wood brothers have a lot of really cool stories and are pretty tight with the Ford family, and so that would be a really neat weekend. But really, any weekend would be awesome, so I'm not going to pick or choose. At the end of the day, we just have to go there and unload with speed and be aggressive as a driver. Try and build off of this. There's been weekends where we've run well, and didn't finish well. And then this weekend, I felt like we had a really up and down day and found a way to finish well. So, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think a result here is going to say, hey, this is a guarantee we're going to finish top five every single weekend from here on out. But also, it shows that we can do it. And it shows that if we keep digging and keep working hard, it'll happen. So, hey, at the end of the day, I'm not going to be picky where it happens as long as it does happen one day. That's all I care about.
I love the nickname. Now Harrison has a nickname.
Oh, really?
Marvin gave him Handsome Harrison.
Oh, very good.
Well, I'm related to you, so it must not be true.
Oh, wow. Harrison.
I was
on television, dude. Come on.
I was going to say the last Handsome.
I'm just going to step away now.
The last Handsome was Harry Gantt. If you can have a career as good as his, you'd be okay.
See, he was going to compliment you.
Yeah,
but he was going to say something nice. Well, so I figured, knowing my dad, it was going to go to the other direction, so I had to jump on it quick and fire one back at him, because I thought he was setting himself – I know him pretty well.
Yeah.
Thought he was setting himself up to take a shot at me there, so I had to get defensive really quick.
Just remember, I didn't spin in turn one this week. That's all I know.
Oh, wow. Just remember, dads always have the final word, Harrison.
That's true.
Cut him off, producer.
Hey, he's a dangerous guy in that NBC car right here. So anyone riding with him, strap tight.
I broke it last week.
Yeah, not a good story there. So, all right, Harrison, good seeing you, man. We'll see you in Michigan, okay?
Yeah, awesome. Thank you, guys, and thanks for having me on, and hopefully we'll talk about some more good finishes soon.
Yeah, we will, no doubt about it. All right, good seeing you, bud. So there's so much chaos to unpack, and we have another show Wednesday. That's where
Thank
we can
goodness.
Start unpacking it. We didn't even talk about the Ryan Blaney spin at the end. We didn't even talk to DJ about Daniel Suarez being mad at him. You see that? I mean, Daniel called DJ out.
You know what I loved about today, though? We got a lot of callers.
And the lines were jammed, and we owe you guys a big credit for that, for calling in at 844-NASCAR-NBC. Sorry for the couple of phone calls we didn't get to. We didn't talk about Chris Buescher's car catching on fire, going down two laps, and then coming back finishing top 10.
Yeah,
crazy. That was insane.
Yeah, it was just incredible. Joey Logano's car also caught fire, and they felt like it was an issue with, same thing with Chris Buescher, with the headers getting bent up in contact and blowing onto the carbon doors, and something that they need to look at, something that hasn't happened before. So that's something for NASCAR and the teams to look at.
But we did talk a lot about Ross Chastain, and I have a feeling that's going to be a topic that's not going to go away between now and when we get to Michigan. We're going to see that replay quite a bit, aren't we?
Phoenix, actually. For now,
yeah, Phoenix. Oh, yeah, my fault. Yeah, Michigan, Phoenix, whatever. Yeah, we see it till the November race, right? So we'll see you here on Wednesday on Motor Mouse, 6 p.m.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.